Welcome to the Women's Leadership Podcast by UNESCO and the Associated Country Women of the World. We will explore the personal experiences of women around the world and discuss the opportunities, the challenges, the obstacles, and the successes on their journeys.
We will ask our guests what leadership means to them and ask them to share their stories and ideas that will inspire more women to embrace leadership and be embraced as leaders.
As we discuss different topics and themes across the series, we will create a platform for women to explain how they see a world with real gender equality being achieved and what role we can all play in making it happen. Hi, I am Garance Sarla, and I work for the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, more specifically for the social and human sciences sector, whose mandate is to promote anti-racism, anti-discrimination, gender equality, the values of sports and the ethics of technology.
Hi, I'm Nick Newland, and I'm the Advocacy Director at the Associated Country Women of the World, or ACWW. Our organization was founded in 1929 to amplify the voices of rural women all over the world and to address the need for representation of rural women in decision-making processes. Over our 95-year history, we've come a long way, and we are delighted to be collaborating with UNESCO on this new podcast as we mark 77 years of holding partnership status with the United Nations.
In this episode, we will talk about the importance of political representation, especially in 2024, a year of elections, and why now is the time to energize global action for gender equality in leadership.
We will start with a message from Gabriela Ramos, Assistant Director General for the Social and Human Sciences sector of UNESCO.
We will continue with an interview with Maggie de Kock, World President of the Associated Country Women of the World.
And last but not least, we will finish with our special guest, Rosie Agoi, Secretary General of the Ugandan National Commission for UNESCO.
It is a pleasure to now welcome our very first guest, Gabriela Ramos.
I am Gabriela Ramos. I'm Assistant Director General of Social and Human Sciences at UNESCO. And I'm really glad with this new initiative because we are really committed to gender equality across the world. In 2024, over 60 countries will be holding national elections worldwide. 4 billion people, almost half of the world population, are expected at the ballot box. Within the framework of UNESCO's Gender Equality Global Priority, this new podcast series is a collaboration between ACWW and the Sector for the Social and Human Sciences at UNESCO. In a global context of persisting inequalities at the highest level of decision-making, we decided to launch this podcast to explore how women leadership shapes our world and how we can take concrete steps to strengthen it. Our goal: nothing less than gender parity in leadership. And more importantly, this podcast is a great opportunity to engage in a critical dialogue with the women leaders all over the world who are paving the way for younger leaders to follow in their footsteps. We wish to share their experiences, their challenges, their opportunities, their solutions for change, and the recommendations for our member states and the international community at large. They are the pioneers. They are the ones that inspire us. So we need to get their wisdom and move this agenda forward. We will host women of renowned and experts in the field, from rural and urban areas, leaders at the global and local levels. Everywhere where they lead, we'll bring them to the podcast. It is aligned with a number of flagship initiatives led by my sector, such as the Gender-Based Resilience Framework. We actually unveiled this first report last year at the Third Global Forum Against Racism and Discrimination in Brazil. This year, our work to prepare the second report will focus on women participation and representation in leadership and decision-making, and on their civic engagement and contribution to political elections. The message from our Gender Resilience Framework is pretty clear. If we have all these gaps and vulnerability that women are suffering, it's not only them that are more vulnerable, it's the whole of our society. And therefore, we need to increase resilience by closing the gender gaps. This podcast will allow us to create global mapping of innovative initiatives that foster women's leadership. We are going to try to tackle remaining obstacles in their path in all spheres of society, in government at elected office, in businesses, in corporate boards, in civil society organizations, Because everywhere we see these gaps in terms of women represented in decision-making bodies. And we cannot have half of the population not having their voice represented when decisions are taken. This mapping will nourish the narratives and qualitative analysis of the gender-based resilience framework to accompany its quantitative analysis and provide evidence-based solutions on how to build equal and resilient societies. And this podcast will also give us all with role models to draw inspiration and motivation from. And they are the crucial importance for younger generations of women, because young women can only be what they can see. And the more we show that it is possible to have women at the top, the more they will be inspired and follow that path. We remain far from gender parity in decision-making. In 2023, there are only 15 countries, 15 out of 200 maybe, with a woman head of states, 16 countries with a woman head of government. But jokes apart, it might be that the reason for having such a conflictual world. In businesses, women head up only 15% of firms worldwide and hold only 25% of management positions in 2023. But everywhere you look, in the field of sports, if you go to a concert, if there is an artist show, there's always the fact that women are not leading these big enterprises, and they should, because they have too much to offer. In some recent trends, evidence shows a small decline in acceptance of women leaders, which is actually more worrisome. With the increase in populism, with misinformation, with disinformation, one of the issues is more aggression against women online, but also this trend countering the progress that we have made in terms of perceptions. There was actually a drop of 7 percentage points in respondents being very comfortable with having a woman as a CEO or a major of a major company in G7 countries in 2023 compared to 2022. This is really worrisome. Fortunately, overall, perceptions and values are improving. We are encouraged to know that in the latest surveys of perception, 70% of men and 75% of women believe that women are equally suitable for leadership as men. This is great. Of course, we have this extra mile to go to convince the 25% or 30% that are not yet convinced that the case is for women leadership is very solid. We also see young women leading progress in transforming mentalities. 76% of women aged 16 to 19 demand more respect for women's rights, in comparison to 66% of other gender and age cohorts. I have seen it. The younger generation don't have patience for inequality, and I think they deserve all of our support. UN Women Gender Equality Attitudes studies in 2022 revealed that 82% of the respondents believe women should have more opportunities in politics, and 88% believe women should have more opportunities in businesses. So we must encourage this positive dynamic. Why? Because gender diversity in companies means increasing productivity, creativity, reputation, innovation, and there are thousands of studies and evidence that prove this point. Gender diversity in politics is associated with faster economic development, growth, and better health-related outcomes. These are the main focuses of our upcoming research at UNESCO and the evidence we want to bring to our member states to guide their policy making. Of course, we know that some tools work very well to achieve gender parity, such as quotas and affirmative action. We need to level the playing field, because if there are obstacles for women to fulfill their full potential, there should be measures to try to make up for that. In my own country, for example, in Mexico, this is how we reach 50% of women in parliament, equals total equality, half and half, and I am proud to have participated in this effort. It was not an easy win, but it's beautiful when you go into my country and you see these so many faces of women that are active in politics, because you know that this will trickle down in the imagination and the spirits of the younger generations, because it's possible. Through this podcast, we will be able to collect many good practices and recommendations, and that's why we are inviting you to listen to it, to engage with it, to come with your own conclusions, but also to engage with us. And I seize the opportunity of this episode to call to action all of our UNESCO partners to join the conversation, to comment on and share the podcast, to reach out to us with their recommendations, and to take part in this Transforming Mentalities project.
I think it was very interesting to hear one of the points Gabriela raises, and as we mentioned in our introduction, that 50% of the world's population live in countries that will go to the ballot box this year. But of course, that doesn't mean that 50% of the world's population will be voting. And we know that in many countries, whether because of legal situations or because of cultural norms, many women won't be represented at the ballot box. And I think one of the really interesting things in your work at UNESCO is how we help address that and try and make sure that we are getting better representation.
It's actually really important to talk about this because there is, of course, the representation of women as candidates running for elections, and then there is a representation of women as electors, as voters, and who gets access to actually voting, to the right information also to vote properly to the candidate that they find is most suited to answering their needs. And if you think about it, that's why the new gender-based resilience framework will look into women's representation, but not just as running candidates, but also how are they contributing to the electoral processes? How are they contributing to the campaigns? How are they contributing to raising awareness around them on current politics? It's very important for UNESCO to include this in the concept of leadership, that it's not just the women who gets elected, but every woman behind them that either gets them elected or contributes to that.
Local community is a major focus in the work of ACWW, and we know that rural women are so often the backbone of communities and carry disproportionate responsibilities for food, water, paid and unpaid work, and raising families. Our next guest is Multi de Kock, World President of the Associated Countrywomen of the World, who joins us from South Africa.
Thank you very much, Nick, for your introduction. I am thrilled to be launching this first episode of our new podcast, which extends our close cooperation with UNESCO in a new way. It is a pleasure to share this episode with Gabriela Ramos and Rosie Agoy, and to bring a personal and professional contribution from my own perspective. One of the exciting opportunities for ACWW is to bring the voices of our members to new ears. And I know that our audience will enjoy hearing from ACWW members and rural women leaders, as well as other inspiring women from around the world.
Thank you so much, Multi, for joining us for this very first podcast. My first question to you is, you are the world president of the Associated Country Women of the World. You work with young women leaders every day. You represent them. You are their spokesperson. What does this mean to you? What does this responsibility mean to you?
Yes, it is. Of course, it's an honor to be serving as the world president of the organization as large as ACWW. But to me, it's also a responsibility because I speak on behalf of rural women who often do not have the opportunity to speak for themselves. ACWW gives a platform to the voices of our members. Actually, I can say amplifying the voices of our members, giving them then the opportunity to speak where they are not always have the access to be there. So then ACWW, not speaking on behalf of our members, but amplifying their voices, their needs, and making sure that they have access to global decision makers, people who need to listen to what they have to say.
Before you were even elected to ACWW's board, you also served community organizations at local and national levels in South Africa. Can you tell us a little bit more about your journey and some highlights that you feel reflect moments of your leadership?
My journey to representing a global women's organization is actually a story of identifying and seizing opportunities. I think the first seed of leadership was planted when I was elected as the class leader in my very first year at school, realizing that I was trusted to represent others, not only by my peers, but also by the figures of authority of our school. You know, I grew up in a home with my parents, who were both leaders in the community. And as a young girl, I was impressed by the dedication in which they served and led the community. And then later at university, followed by my professional career as a school principal and voluntary worker in the community, more opportunities presented itself. And every time I regarded it as an opportunity to embrace my potential as a leader, then striving not only to lead, but also to serve. I think to lead others well, one should be available and willing to serve others.
I really appreciate this comment on service and on dedication to others. I think that as leaders, it's very important that others are empowered, that leadership is not about getting oneself to the top, but being at the top for the good of others. Can you maybe share a little bit about your own experience making sure that your service for others is empowering?
I would love to think that it is all about setting an example. And in my approach, it is necessary for other people to actually observe. Therefore, we need to present others with the opportunities to see how leaders are working, the visibility. You know, I think to highlight successful women leaders across various fields so that younger leaders will see the way they work and will see the way how they approach their responsibilities. Also, I think it is very important to create platforms for women to connect with established leaders. Mentorship programs. That is something I think is very important. It will provide guidance and support. And I think it's very important for leaders to celebrate the achievements of younger leaders.
So when we talk about sharing and mentorship, service, networking, to me, these all start in local community. So can you talk to us a little bit more about ACWW's experience on, you know, building up leadership from the community level and where we started with that?
Yes, I would like to mention that if I think back in our history, I think it was in the 1950s, 1953, that ACWW's membership passed a resolution on the rights and the responsibilities of women and citizenship. And this encouraged our membership to step forward and seek nomination and election and to be recognized for their leadership roles in their communities. Since then, investing in capacity building for women and particularly in leadership has been a focus of our work. And this has included, it actually included a three-year campaign immediately following the Beijing Declaration and Platform for Action to achieve action and improvement on the 12 critical areas of concern. One of the three key elements of our work is education and community development. This means we invest in local-led, locally developed, women-led and focused initiatives.
How do we make sure that people really are being heard? What does that look like?
Our members are represented by themselves, if I can put it that way, because we work in different areas. We work in 9 areas all over the world. And within these areas, the members have the opportunity to nominate and to elect their representatives. Through this process, people are representing their own people. And that is what is so wonderful about the diversity of our organization.
I really appreciate the focus that you put on diversity and representation and collaboration. I think those three go very well together because you cannot contribute to the decisions at the top if you're not represented at the top, of course, and your voices need to be included, which is why we're talking about making sure that women are leaders at the decision-making tables and they're not excluded.
Can you give us an insight into a couple of the more exciting opportunities and the biggest challenges you've faced?
Well, I think I'd like to mention the exciting opportunities first. Having the opportunity to meeting and networking with influential people and decision makers on a global platform, representing a major women's organization and speaking on behalf of rural women, actually promoting investment in education, training and skill building programs that empower women to develop leadership in their own right.
Thank you so much, Magdi, for this first interview on your role as world president of ACWW, of the role of ACWW to empower young women leaders.
Thank you for the interview. It has been a privilege to have the opportunity to collaborate with UNESCO on this new project.
Going back to 1953, ACWW members voted a policy resolution at our World Conference on the rights of women in citizenship, but also their responsibilities. And we see in some countries, like in Australia and New Zealand, there are rules around, you know, that you should vote and you should take part in political processes. And I think one of the factors that is sometimes forgotten when we look at the international level is the importance of local elections, because that so often determines the quality of life for communities and the lived reality on a daily basis for so many people. And I think one of the points that Gabriella highlights is the importance of throughout the life of women, from childhood right through to older age, but also through their stages of responsibility and action, that we see meaningful engagement and participation.
And this is also with local leaders that you know, that live in your communities, that you get to have the role models that you need to then, as a young girl, as a young woman, believe that you can get to that level in life. Of course, I mean, if you see a woman president, it's a huge message, it's a huge signal. You can use this to be a role model for you. But if it's a woman that you know in your own community, in your own city, this is even more empowering, I find.
Absolutely. And I know, looking ahead to our next episode, we're going to have, not to offer a teaser to our audience, but we'll have the ambassador of Mexico to France, and she's going to exactly be talking about that journey through life, starting off, and how she perhaps never aimed to be a leader, but has become one because of her journey.
Exactly. And how sometimes you trace your steps back and look backwards and think, I had no idea I could get there, but I did. That's a really good episode.
Our final guest for this episode is Rosie Egoy, Secretary General of the Ugandan National Commission for UNESCO. I had the great pleasure of meeting Rosie last year during UNESCO's General Conference and got to learn a little about her work and priorities, and I'm delighted she is able to join us today. So, Rosie, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Nick. I think I have a very long journey. First of all, I was born in a family of 5 girls and 2 boys. And you know, in our African setting, boys mean a lot for a family. Boys are usually considered the leaders, the heirs. And so I think when my father found himself with a bundle of girls around him, he decided to mold some of us into very aggressive, assertive, boy-like looking girls, to his satisfaction that perhaps he had some, you know, some children around him that could play the role of girls. So I'm the second born, the first born being a girl, and then my follower is a boy. Then after that, there were girls, and then boy, and then finally a girl. So a family of 7, and I was slowly molded into an aggressive, an assertive, a fearless, shyless little girl. And I would say my leadership or my confidence around steering groups started when I was in at home, and then in primary school, playing the role of a prefect, a class monitor once in a while, but above all, performing on stage. I would dance, I would sing, I would do poetry on stage, and that gave me a lot of confidence. A lot of confidence standing before people, being able to speak without fearing anybody. And that is usually the confidence I don't know how it comes, but I am so confident, Nick, that I don't know what to do sometimes about myself. So this is how I got into it. And then I went into teacher training. That for me, you know, my school practice was A+. I don't know, they could have said A++. I don't know. But I had this confidence as a young teacher. I could teach, I could lead, and no sooner was I in school than I was given leadership positions, head of department, in charge of library, in charge of discipline. Then I got into this now leadership as a deputy head teacher of a secondary school. And this is where I think all the leadership skills manifested itself, because now I found myself in charge of teachers, of students, in charge of discipline, in charge of academics, and I steered them to great heights. Then, of course, there was this advert run, program officers needed in the National Commission for UNESCO, and I applied. And that's how I ended up in the National Commission for UNESCO as a program officer. And Nick, I'll tell you that I worked for 2 years as a program officer. And then my secretary general said, you are going to be the assistant secretary general, when we had the exit of the assistant secretary general. So I started acting, and then I was interviewed. And I will tell you that the interview was a very interesting one. We were conversing, and one woman, a panel of 7 men, and it was very nice. They looked at the confidence that I had, and I think that has given me some leadership skills. And then I became Secretary General in 2017. And of course, I had already been mentored, I'd already been given the conducive environment. Speaking in meetings, speaking my mind, advising government, even for very hard things. Nick, my minister and chairperson of the National Commission for UNESCO, is the First Lady. And you know how first ladies, nobody wants to speak when they are present. But I'm one person, Nick, who has been able to voice out my opinion, given guidance, even where nobody wants to speak. I tell them, UNESCO guidelines provide for this 1, 2, 3 things. The SDGs are in for this. TESS is in for this. We are now looking at the 5 thematic areas, and I speak out. But many people wouldn't do that because of the personality involved. So I think my journey into leadership, other than, of course, having additional training in management studies, a few workshops, a few leadership courses, I think the journey started from home, when I was molded into a boy-girl kind of character, because my father was looking for a boy child in some of us. So I think this has been my journey, and I've been able to at least perform my role very confidently.
It's really interesting, the connection that you make as someone who has trained and worked as a musician with the comfort that comes in leadership and the experience that the arts and culture, performance, music, dance gives us in a space. In our next episode, we hear from the Mexican ambassador to France, and she talks about having to fit into a man's position, a man's role, a man's world. The points you highlight about your growing up, having to be more aggressive, more assertive, perhaps more masculine, lead us neatly to our next question, which is that your position means that you are a senior advisor to government ministries and departments, as well as connecting UNESCO secretariat, field office, and other national commissions with local priorities. You've already mentioned the First Lady. Do you think that leadership is a gendered issue? And how do you think that this plays into your role and your work?
I would say yes and no. It is gendered because, you know, traditionally in Africa, women, most women are not given the conducive environment. Sometimes your male counterparts want to pull you down, you know. They don't want you to go ahead of them. They don't want you to excel. They think you shouldn't be cleverer, I would so say. You shouldn't be cleverer, you shouldn't be smarter. So they'll look for opportunities to pull you down. I have encountered some of this, and the smarter way to deal with it is just go about doing what you think is right. And finally, I have won a few hats. They have begun to believe that a woman, a female, has got something that can build leadership skills, can be smarter. And a few of them have begun appreciating. But along the way, you get these kind of challenges where they pull you down. They even want to shut you up in meetings, but I've overcome it. And then on the other hand, I would say my government has promoted women in leadership. The policy is usually you get a third of women in any position in a department. So like 7 are recruited, and then you have 1 or 2 women. So this has been really promoted, and I would like to thank my government very much because it has given some of us the opportunity to lead, because by and large now, we are very many women leaders. And by and large, we are getting the support, the belief in our male counterparts that it can work. But of course, the traditional mentality keeps coming, popping in once in a while, makes you a little uncomfortable. But I would say the environment is very conducive because it's a government policy. When I joined the commission as a program officer, I was the only female among men. The SG was a gentleman, the assistant was a gentleman, and my 3 colleagues were men. I was the only female. But because of the appreciation that comes with, you know, you being able to steer the leadership, you begin to win, you know, confidence, even in your male counterparts. And I think I want to believe that this is how I was singled out of the many men to become the Assistant Secretary General. And that was my journey towards the leadership in the National Commission. So when you believe in yourself and do your best and you don't allow to be pulled down, I think you win the confidence, you get the support, and you are consequently led to greater heights because people believe in you.
The two-strand approach there then of personal development and confidence and growing in a role, but also the policy change where, as you said, government policy calls for 1/3 of women in positions is really crucial. And we've seen in lots of places that, I don't want to say enabling environment because it's such a fundamental necessity in life, but the policy change accompanying people's willingness and readiness to take positions. One of the themes of this episode is, of course, encouraging people to stand for election, to inspire leadership. And I think you're a wonderful role model in that. You've talked about the policy of the Ugandan government in this situation. Can you tell us a bit more about the gender priorities that you have as Secretary General of the National Commission and the specific progress that you'd like to see in the next 5 years or anything you'd like to highlight as real achievements in your tenure so far?
I will start with our background. You know, traditionally, the girl child in Uganda, the girl child is not given equal opportunities traditionally. It is changing gradually, but not yet there. So when a parent has an opportunity to choose who should go to school and who should remain, most likely the girl will remain. And when it comes to the girl child in school doing especially science subjects, usually there are these stereotypes, oh, you know, girls, you cannot climb a tree, therefore you cannot become an engineer. Oh, girls, you are supposed to be doing home economics and cooking and not doing things that run machines and carpentry and, you know, things that are usually associated with the boy child. So the girl child has been edged out of the science subjects. They consider it difficult, and the teachers are not making it any easier. Even the female teachers, surprisingly, mathematics teachers, they say, these are not for girls. These are not for the girl child. I don't think you can manage. So the girls are discouraged. They end up doing art subjects. They are not into sciences. So for me, in the commission, my priority is having as many girls into STEM as possible, mentoring them, coaching them, bringing together role models to show them how far they have journeyed and how they overcame these stereotypes is my dream at the NATCO. And we would want to see more girls into science subjects, into technology, into engineering, into mathematics. That is my priority, because that way we can then begin talking about gender equality, because we are giving them equal opportunities or even better and more opportunities against the boys. This is my thinking, and this is what we have been doing with the regional office, with myself talking, finding every opportunity to talk to the girl child. And I always tell them how I ran away from sciences because it was not very appealing. You know, the teachers were very discouraging. They were not motivating. They were not smart. They didn't look nice. So I fell in love with my teacher of literature because, oh, she was so pleasant. So I usually talk to the science teachers. They say, you know, the girls these days like smart things. They like beautiful things. So try to look nice and try to be accommodative. Try to be kind. Try to be appealing. They will run to you and they will not find sciences difficult. So for me, I usually call them wooden teachers. I'm sorry to say, but that was my simple way of dealing with it. And I fell in love with the art. So why can't we have this to the science group? So I usually, as an individual, talk about how they should be more accommodative, more appealing. And then as a commission, we are driving the STEM agenda together with the Ministry of Education and Sports.
You mentioned again the arts as a pathway to entry. I know that some countries talk about a STEAM agenda, so science, technology, engineering, arts, and maths. And I think we shouldn't forget the lessons that we can learn from arts and culture as pathways when we're looking at then challenging the systematic and perpetuated barriers to entry into STEM for young women and girls. Dr. Rosie Agoi, Secretary General of the Ugandan National Commission for UNESCO, thank you so much for joining us remotely from Kampala, Uganda, where we can hear the streets are alive and thriving outside your office. It's been wonderful to have you with us for this first episode.
I think it's a wonderful opportunity to share these experiences with other women and men, of course, around the world. I would like to thank you very much for, you know, making this possible. It has not been easy, but I appreciate your initiative, and I appreciate the role that you're playing in trying to promote women empowerment and women leadership. On this 8th March 2024, I would like to wish all the women, be it the leaders and those led, a very happy Women's Day. Together as women, we can make a difference in this world.
Thank you for listening to this very first podcast by UNESCO and ACWW. It was recorded at UNESCO headquarters. It was produced and directed by Emmanuel Rudowski. It was co-hosted by Nick Newland and Garance Sarla, with the support of Juliette Celeste. Thank you, and see you soon!